Kurezanan Sinana Les, Eduard Kiris Me, and this is joint work with Scipio Cucagna, who's now at University of Modena, and with Dmitry Palinovsky, who's in here from McMaster University. And I guess the title and the names are not that important, so I won't put on the other one. So here is the problem I'm going to look into. And eventually, I would like to make a connection between this problem and KAM theory, although it doesn't look like right now. So it's the NLS equation, cubic NLS equation, with a linear potential V. So let me see if it's better to show it there, maybe. A linear potential V, and we are looking for initial data in H1. H1 is the Hilbert-Sobolev space, so the L2 space in which the derivatives are also in L2, the distributional derivative. And L2S is the weighted L2 space. Here is the definition of the norm in the L2 weighted space. As you can see, if S is positive, what you are doing is enhancing the tails of the function F. So U0, I'm sorry there is a mistake, it's L2 minus, no, L2S, okay. So U0 has to have higher decay at the tails in order to still be in L2. So this is killing, enhancing the tails, so the U0 has to have very low tails in order for our theory to apply. Now the linear potential is decaying also at infinity, in this fashion, so a little bit better than third power, so Coulomb potential doesn't work, but we already know that little decay is bad for estimates, for elliptic estimates for Schrodinger operators. So the perturbation has a time-dependent term, so well, the perturbation. Think at U0 as being small. Think at the fact that we are going to look at a linear problem perturbed by a nonlinear term, and the nonlinear term has time dependence. So I will choose a very simple time dependence, which is harmonic function with frequency omega. And one last important assumption is, and I didn't want to give it in terms of V of X, is that I'm looking at the spectrum of a Schrodinger operator. I would like to see one bound state and the rest is the continuum spectrum. The fact that the rest is the continuum spectrum is already contained in this condition. I'm looking at one bound state, so let me just draw a picture for you. V of X should be a little bit, so it should be attractive. So on this axis, it will be x. X is in R3, so we are working in three dimensions. But I'm going to do a one-dimensional picture. And on this axis, I will put the values the potential it takes. And you could think of V of x as being decaying at infinity and attractive in the middle so that it supports exactly one bound state. Okay, so there is one eigenvalue, which is somewhere here, it will be negative, and it will be an associated eigenvector with it, which will probably look like that. Actually, because of the decay of V of X, the tails here decay exponentially, but let's not get into all the details. So that's the problem I'm going to study. And I'm near the linear equation. So let's just say what happens in the linear equation. The linear equation you can decompose as an evolution of the bound state and an evolution of something else. Let's just call it something else for now. It's actually the projection on the continuum spectrum of the Laplacian plus V. So minus Laplacian plus V has the following spectrum. From 0 to infinity is absolutely continuous. There is certain regularity of the measure induced here because of the decay in V of X. of the potential V, so similar to the regularity of the minus Laplacian. And I pulled, because of an attractive potential, I pulled out one eigenvalue. So that's the spectrum of the time-independent Schrödinger operator, and then the time-dependent Schrödinger operator, the one there, just the linear part, will behave like a periodic solution, which is called the bound state, and a projection, another part, which is called dispersive, and it's called dispersive because of the following properties. What you can see here is that the dispersive part, if you look at a localizing norm, so this is again L2 weighted, but now with minus S, that means I'm killing the tails. So you look at the L2 norm of this operator, but you destroy the tails of it, of the function at infinity in space. And if you do that, you can see T to the power 3 half decay. Okay, exactly like the minus Laplacian would do. Okay, so, and the same thing you can get in LP estimates. And the reason we need LP estimates is because we have a nonlinearity in the problem, and in order to control the nonlinear terms, you need LP estimates in the linear problem. And we'll probably see it in more detail. As you can see, this is a bit singular. LP estimates blow up at T equals 0, but still at infinity, as time progresses, in L4, for example, you will see less and less of this part in your solution. That's why it's called dispersive, and it has to do with the fact that it is a wave packet, and the wave numbers travel with different velocity, and when they reconstruct the solution, you have growing and growing tails, and less and less nearby your potential. And if you kill those tails, you get decay. And L4 also kills some of the tails. It actually doesn't kill the tails, but it gets you also some decay. This is rather non-trivial, in my opinion, so it's hard work to get these estimates, and it's still an ongoing work to reduce the assumption on the potential V under which you get that. Actually, this is a preprint still, I guess, to get this kind, for this kind of potential, that little assumption on V, in order to obtain this kind of estimates. Yeah. Well, yes, and the reason you don't see the incoming in this estimate is because from the beginning I assume that my initial condition doesn't have tails. So, but that's an extremely important point. So. And well, we actually will have to dig on what you are just saying, is that a lot of the obstacles you have to overcome to move this problem from 3 to 2, to 2 dimensions, for example, are related with the LP estimates. And what you are doing with the LP estimates, you allow, or you are working like you are considering that the wave can come back after the expect. Okay. So, and The point is that we should do much better than that. But unfortunately, I don't know how right now. So now I move to the nonlinear equation, but now with a time independent coefficient, okay? So it's not the time dependent problem. And this problem has bound states, so almost the same structure as the linear problem, a periodic solution, and something else. And you get the bound states from an eigenvalue problem. And they actually, what's written here is that if you look at bound states, which are, let's put it different that it's on the slide, which are small in L2 norm, if you are looking to find a bound state which is very close to zero in L2 norm, you are going to find one for an eigenvalue which is very close to the one you have for the linear problem. Okay, so let me then draw something else, which would be a bifurcation diagram. Here is your eigenvalue, here is the real numbers, and on the real axis I will represent the eigenvalues, and here is now the L2 norm of the bound state you are looking for. For zero L2 norm, you are on the linear problem, and you see the lambda eigenvalue, lambda naught, and the psi bound state, or eigenvector. If you increase in the nonlinear problem now the norm you allow for the bound state, then what you see, depending on the sign of gamma zero, what you see is a curve, and on this curve, what I represent is that at this level of L2 norm, there is one bound state, one eigenvector, with eigenvalue corresponding to this number here. Okay? So that's the bifurcation diagram for bound states near the linear bound state for this nonlinear Schrödinger equation. And if gamma, so that will be with gamma zero, I guess, negative. For gamma zero positive, you see something like that. So as you increase the L2, you'll see that the eigenvalue will have larger value or smaller in absolute value. Okay? These bound states are orbitally stable, which means if you start with a solution which looks like the bound state, but it's a little bit perturbed, you will stay around it. So this is techniques, you can use variational techniques like Shatta-Strauss, Rose Weinstein, to get this result. But more impressive is that in fact they are asymptotically stable. If you start near a bound state, so forget about one of the curves, gamma zero is fixed, is less than zero, for example. If you start with an initial condition which looks like the bound state that corresponds to this eigenvalue down here, but it's a little bit perturbed, the entire system will fall on one of the nearby bound states. Okay? So, mathematically speaking, you can decompose the solution, or as time goes to infinity, the solution looks like a dynamics around the bound state corresponding to eigenvalue lambda and psi lambda, the eigenvector, which is nonlinear in this case. And, the eigenvector is just a profile in L2. And another part, which decays exactly like it happened with the linear equation. This is, again, my opinion, a highly non-trivial result. And no, actually it won't be. Actually, so the way to see it is if you kill the potential and look at the bifurcation diagram from here, if you are in the repelling case, which is this, you get no bound states, no nonlinear bound states, you get only dispersion basically. And if you are in the attractive, you do get bound states, but which are unstable. Without the potential, you can actually show that you have profiles which are getting close to these bound states. If you remove that, it will be ground states, but let's say nonlinear bound states, which blow up. Basically, I should say more clearly, they do not appear for very small value of L2. You have to give them a lot of L2, and they do not bifurcate from zero, in my opinion. but I'm not a big specialist of a bifurcation from the continuum spectrum. Yeah. But the result is by Casanova and says the following. If you don't have a potential and you try to do bifurcation, you don't do bifurcation, you basically find ground states for your problem, and what you show is that in fact they have a negative energy, which means that the L2 norm is sufficiently large already for them. It can't be very close to zero. And, well, nearby you find solutions which are with a negative energy. Okay? So, now finally we are at the nonlinear equation, the full problem I wanted to study. And what the modulation instability or simulation show, or also an averaging method for omega going to infinity, which would be like homogenization theory, say, is the following thing. On this diagram, what the solution does, it moves back and forth at this level. For this equation, you still have conservation of L2 norm. You don't have conservation of energy because of the time dependence in the problem, the Hamiltonian time dependence, basically. But conservation of L2 norm stays. In this picture, it will look like, so the bound states here and there, so now this represents gamma mean, the minimum value of gamma of t, which I believe is gamma 0 minus gamma 1 in this simple example. And this is gamma max, which will be gamma 0 plus gamma 1. So the bound state corresponding on this bifurcation diagram to gamma mean, which would be a, you know, constant coefficient problem, will be something similar to that. Since it's attractive, it will look like this. And for gamma max, the bifurcation will tell me that at this eigenvalue, I will have a bound state which looks like this. Well, it should be below, I guess. And what you actually see here is a breather. It goes from this space profile to this space profile, and so on and so forth. That's numerical simulations, okay? The argument is made only when omega goes to infinity, and in that case it says that the problem averages out to a problem time independent in which you will have a bifurcation diagram like that going somewhere on the average of the two. Okay? Well, actually, so the averaging method works only if omega goes to infinity. And what I'm going to tell you now is that if omega is finite, that's not what really happens. So you have resonances, and that's what my talk is about. Now, let's skip now the fact that the numerical simulations are for a potential which doesn't have the dispersion channel, doesn't have the continuum spectrum in it, but let's skip that. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So that would be now averaging. Dmitry Polinovsky is in the audience. Is it completely rigorous, or there are things which are not really proved there? But let's say it's completely rigorous, the averaging. So what it says is there exists a solitary wave. It's a breeder. It's a time-dependent solitary wave, but it's there. That's the result. And I'm going to say now that omega is finite. I'm going to say now that the problems you are interested in likely have dispersion in them, likely have continuum spectrum in them. And in, under that assumption, I'm going to tell you that this is not going to happen. And the motion will actually look like this. So you lose near the standing wave you are wanted to see, you lose amplitude. It's going to decay the amplitude. You will see this profile like breathing. Well, we haven't, okay. You will see this profile like breathing only if you blow up the projection on it by a factor of t to the power 1/4, because they decay like t to the power 1/4. So basically what happens, because of the coupling between the linear bound state and the continuum spectrum, this picture, which is a breeder, is going to develop tails, which will be pushed to infinity, and then they will take the mass or charge, whatever you want to consider, particles actually, from the standing wave and move them to infinity. There will be nothing left at the end of the day in your window. But you might say that there might be another standing wave around outside of this psi. So A of t is basically projection on the linear bound state. So the linear bound state lives around the center of your potential, basically. Maybe there is another solitary wave at the infinity forming, which would not be seen by projecting on the profile psi, but the L4 norm there, it's telling you that that's not going to happen either. Okay, so there will be no solitary waves left in this problem. Yes.
Can we talk about it for both sides?
But we are in the regime of small initial data. It would be great to get some results for large initial data, but let's say small coefficient gamma 1, so small time-dependent perturbation, to be in the perturbation regime. Okay, so the proof is based on a reduction to ODEs, and here is something I would like to tell people who like to work with infinite or finite number of frequency, but which are discrete. Let's leave the theorem here for now, or maybe this is better there. What you are seeing here is a problem between oscillators, which was the linear bound state, the one corresponding to the eigenvalue lambda 0, or which I, the profile in X, I can trace it there, which is coupled by a nonlinearity, by a perturbation to the continuum spectrum. So let's call that a dispersive channel. It disperses the waves at infinity. Now, what I'm going to show in this proof, and that's the reason I introduced part of the proof in my talk, is that this can be reduced to basically ODE system if there are many oscillators. In my case, it will be much simpler. There will be one oscillator, not two, not three, which have perturbation will induce an elliptic corrections at lower orders, and somewhere at higher orders, you will see a hyperbolic correction. What do I mean by that? By that I mean that the correction at lower orders do not have the possibility. Let's see, this is my equation looks like that. If I move I on the other side, I'm actually looking at the problem at the spectrum of minus I minus Laplacian plus Z. Well, that means I should rotate this picture on that side in the complex plane. So what I have an eigenvalue minus I lambda 0, the lower order terms can only move my eigenvalues linearly, I speak here. It's a nonlinear problem, but linearly, they can only move the eigenvalues in the on the imaginary axis. There is no decay coming on. But at higher order, because of the resonance with the continuum spectrum here, you will get a term which is able to move your eigenvalues from the imaginary axis to actually the left, half plane, and that's where you get the decay. Now, in general, in very not very complicated natural problems, actually, the way to show that this higher order term dominates and does move your eigenvalue of your nonlinear problem. Okay, what means eigenvalue for the nonlinear problem or spectrum for a nonlinear operator? That's a problem. But let's imagine like that, that it moves them to the left of the half plane. So that's a difficult problem to show, for me at least. And I think the almost reducibility theory for, if you want, even linear equation with almost periodic coefficient will have something to say about that. Okay, so that's the reason I am going to introduce some part of the proofs in that this problem. So how do we prove the problem, the theorem? And I'll go back to the full equation I'm studying. What I'm going to do, I'm going to decompose it as a projection which now depends on time on the linear bound state. This is the linear bound state again. And something else. Okay? If you do that, it's an easy calculation to show that the equation on the A of t now and u d of t, which will recreate your solutions, are an ODE for, well, an coupled ODE with a PDE. PDE for the UD of t, the things which I will hope it will be dispersive. And the coupled is done by the nonlinearity term, gamma of t, gamma of t u squared u. Here I'm writing almost explicitly what this term means, the coupling term. So there is one contribution from that term which is only dependent on A, and then contribution which depend on the unknown function UD, okay, up until the cubic one. And let's do a little bit of heuristic and show you the resonance, and then I will show you how to make this rigorous. The heuristic is the following. Forget about the terms in the equation for the dispersive channel, basically, which depend on the actual a value of the dispersing channel at that time. So that put just this part. Of course, there is another mistake here. There is no other mistake. I'm sorry. This is okay. Now, think of this problem that you can interpret as a linear problem, okay? H is simply minus Laplacian plus V. And the forcing, this doesn't depend on you, okay? It's a forcing. Now, the linear problem is the linear problem we discussed and has this spectrum, okay, an eigenvalue lambda 0 and a continuum. Well, because I'm projecting already on the continuum spectrum, you can forget about this part. The projection operator will remove this part. So that's the spectral problem or the spectrum of this linear operator. Now the forcing. The forcing has frequency minus lambda naught. In gamma of t, I have a minus omega, okay? And assume that A of t is almost constant, which will be the ansatz if this is the motion here. If A of t is almost constant, I have a forcing with the frequencies lambda 0 plus omega. Lambda 0 plus omega under my hypothesis lands on the continuum spectrum. So you have a resonant forcing of a problem with a continuum of frequencies. Okay? Now, that's a bit scary, that continuum of frequencies. But here is how you deal with that. The second equation in the slide on your left is only the integral form of the equation that was on the previous slide, and in which I thrown all this part of it into an operator, okay? Or a map. You don't know it's an operator yet. It doesn't, what's the space in which it's invariant? We'll see that in a few minutes. So that's a rewriting of that equation, and the rewriting of the first equation is actually here. Almost complete. What we are missing is same terms of the same, but with complex conjugate of A. Here is A with B instead of complex conjugate of A, and this is the full term on the cubic the cubic contribution of UD in the equation of A. Okay, so it's just a rewriting, but now if you plug in just the line in which I said that the resonance occurs in the equation for A, that part depends only on the initial condition and on the amplitude A. So you'll have a closed equation in A, an integral differential equation, not an ODE equation in A, but we are getting close. So let's get an ODE out of it. I wish I knew how to solve integral differential equations. It would be much easier if we could get the result from solving integral differential equations. Now I'm looking at the most important term in this integral differential equation, namely, everything is bent here, namely, the second term in the equation for the dispersive channel in an integral form. I forget about this. This is the dispersive part, which in the linear case was decaying as t to the power 3 halves. You plug in the linear contribution of UD to the equation of A. Forgot about the contribution UD squared, UD cubed. We treat them perturbatively. And you do that, and that's your term. That's exactly that term. Okay, so it's an integral, and then it's the factor in front of this scalar product. Okay? So now I want to make an ODE out of it. So if I integrate somehow by parts, for example, I pull out some boundary terms, which will be depending on A and not multiplied by any other operators. And then maybe another integral, but maybe at lower orders, hopefully. So he, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. So I'm not going to look at this full equation. I'm going to look at only one term in this part of the equation, which is plug-in instead of UD, the first two, but not really the first two, only the second. Okay? Imagine that I take the initial value on the dispersive channel to be zero. It's simpler to think that way. Okay? So that's that term here. And I will integrate by parts in the following way. I'm going to find an antiderivative of this operator. So these two terms, the gamma s e to the minus I lambda 0 s and operator e to the minus I h t minus s. Antiderivative of that, okay? And I will put the derivative on a squared a. If I put a derivative on a squared a, is like a squared derivative of a. Derivative of a brings me a third order a there. It's lower order. If you work with small initial data. Okay. So now it's a matter of what's the antiderivative of this operator, and here is a way to compute it. Okay, let's skip that part and just say that that antiderivative, and if you guys are picky, you should have told me that this is not from 0 to t, it's from t to infinity, but it's okay now. What's going on here, the problem is almost the operator I started with, the linear operator. but it has a resolvent added to it, and the resolvent is computed on the continuum spectrum of that linear operator, so it's a singular operator. You have no chance to work in L2 with that. So for that reason, you work in L2 weighted spaces, and this convergence of this antiderivative to this operator is proved in, and it's strong in these spaces. These spaces is you can apply the antiderivative of the operator I'm looking at, or this operator if you want, to a function which was localized in space. Even if I grow its tails, it still stays in L2. But the result might grow its tails, so if you kill them, you are back in L2. That's L2 weighted estimates, basically. And that's what Walter was pointing at. And if you agree with that computation I just did, and you just plug this term back into the equation, compute it this way, back into your equation, and you keep this, that, and you forget about these two, which are, again, I'm going to treat them perturbatively, you get the following result. So you still have the first part, which is the bound state interacting with itself. This is the bound state interacting to with the continuum spectrum. And the third term is the residual from the computation you did for the interaction between the bound state and the continuum spectrum. Now, what's significant about gamma, which unfortunately doesn't appear on this slide, but I'm going to use it. Well, looks like I wasn't. Okay, eventually gamma is here. You can put your hands on gamma in an abstract manner if you want. And that's basically the projection of psi cubed on the generalized eigenvector of Laplacian, minus Laplacian plus V, which lives at this frequency. And take the square of that. That's Fermi-Golden rule, basically. And it's generically bigger than zero if you are in the continuum spectrum. It is zero if you are not in the continuum spectrum. It might be zero even if you are in the continuum spectrum, but that's non-generic. So I guess I'm already getting very technical here. Now, good. That's the problem I was mentioning, okay? What I did, I reduced the problem to a problem in the amplitudes. I have only one in this problem. Luckily, I have a lower order correction coming from the perturbation, but which cannot look at the, if you look exactly at the absolute value of evolution of A from this part of the equation, this term disappears in absolute value. It only gives you a phase change. It moves your eigenvalues on the imaginary axis only. Okay? Then the second part here, gamma, is the guy who can move your eigenvalues on the left plane of the complex plane. And you have to forget about rho of t, which is, in this case, is periodic, but in general is an oscillatory function which averages to zero. You have to forget about it to somehow, in order to get your result, to say that gamma dominates. And gamma also dominates this term. So that's the problem I mentioned, which has to do with reducibility of system of ODEs, if you want. And the natural, one natural framework in which you'll have this problem is where actually gamma of t here and rho of t here has a quasi-periodic with a dense spectrum or with a dense Fourier spectrum in R. The coefficients are, well, I guess I'm actually trying to say that at some point. So here is what the general theory I have in mind. What you had on the other slide is exactly this. So these two terms are like the second and third term. In my problem here, the fast oscillations are removed, but put them back to see it as a perturbation problem. Otherwise, what you see is, let's say you can kill somehow this one, it's not a perturbation problem, the rho of t is the same size as your constant matrix. And I don't know if you can play with that, but in this framework is exactly reduction. Reduce this equation to this form, where because the average of m2 of t, after you do the reduction of the main term, basically, has a negative real part, hope that that holds for the reduced equation also. And then you are almost done, because from this equation you will extract decay of a of t. Now, there is one catch to that. It's not exactly that I was solving the integral differential ODE, okay? So you still have to deal with this part, the remaining integral part of your equation. And that's pretty nasty. I'm writing you some technical things here. The conclusion of this slide is the following. As long as you are away from zero with lambda 0 plus omega, you see lambda 0 plus omega falls on the continuum spectrum, but I don't want to fall on the threshold, then you have decay estimates for this singular operator here, exactly like the decay estimates you had for the non-singular operator, which is the linear operator, Schrodinger type operator, time-independent coefficients, constant coefficients. And in that case, this term is perturbative. If not, if you land on the threshold of the continuum spectrum, what you get is a much less decay on the estimates for the singular operator, and makes this term to be actually higher order than the minus gamma a to the power 4 a of t in your equation, unfortunately. So it's a question of estimate. So in your reduction, you have to be careful not to get close to zero here. And if you have a full a set of Fourier coefficients which are dense in R, you are getting close to there, and you have to avoid that. Okay? The coefficients won't be analytical, okay? But what you will have, they will be analytical when you get close to a given value like zero, but they will just decay polynomial if you get close to infinity, basically. So it's not analytical coefficients. So it has some its own flavor, this problem, but you, I'm sure somebody will be able to solve it. That I'm sure. So where was I? I guess I was looking too much at generalization and less at what I can do. And what I can do is the following. I'm not going to get close to zero here with lambda 0 plus omega, so this is perturbative. This is what counts. You move at the amplitude, at the absolute value of the amplitude, as opposed to studying its phase also. These terms disappear. These terms disappear too. You are left with the real part of rho of t. That's something you can solve exactly. It's one ODE. Okay, so I'm done. So you get your decay in A of t. And the way, just one more phrase, the way you bootstrap that, so now you only have decay of the something which is close to the ODE you were supposed to solve, but you also have to treat your dispersive channel correctly. Up until now, I neglected this part in my problem, and I neglected this part in my problem. Bootstrapping estimates for this part have been done in the past. However, it didn't seem to work in this case. What we used is contraction principle in two Banach spaces. One Banach space is related with the solution if you have only this forcing. In this Banach space, you get very good decay, but the solution may start sufficiently large, like epsilon. And this forcing is epsilon cubed, if you want, a squared a, but it decays much slower. So you need another Banach space with that. And you have to split your solution into two parts, one coming from this forcing, the other from that forcing. You have to apply Picard iteration only once. Well, usually you don't apply Picard iteration, but in this case you need, in order to make these terms here to be perturbative with respect to the one I showed you how to do it. So that's the end of the proof, basically. Now.